Today is Wednesday, December the 18th. Welcome to the award-winning Personal Computer Show. I'm Hank Key. As winter approaches, many of us are reminded of the importance of warmth and comfort. Unfortunately, not everyone has access to proper winter clothing. Donating a winter coat can make a significant difference in someone's life. Donating winter coats helps those in need stay warm during the colder months. Many individuals and families struggle financially, making it difficult for them to afford essential clothing items like coats, hats, and gloves. By donating your gently used or new winter coats, you contribute to the community support initiatives that aim to keep vulnerable populations safe and warm during the harsh winter conditions. Contact local charities and organizations that accept clothing donations. Websites like Goodwill, Salvation Army, or local shelters often have specific programs dedicated to collecting winter gear. You can also use search engines by typing in the keywords such as winter coat donation near me, or you can type in coat drive near me for more targeted results. Big Tech has been collecting and aggregating your personal data. Do you know how big tech companies and our government are using your personal data? We have been bringing computer news, hardware and software reviews, guest interviews, and news of user group meetings for the past 40-plus years. The Personal Computer Show is a 3-time winner of the prestigious National Computer Press Awards. Our only advocacies are consumerism and the First Amendment. I welcome you, the listeners, to provide feedback as to what you want to hear. Address your suggestions to Hank at pcradioshow.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.live. That's PRN.live, streaming on the Internet. Podcast of the program is available on PRN.live on the Internet. You can leave us a message with your questions or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. YouTube is taking over TV. A year-end update reveals that more people than ever are watching the video sharing platform on television, an inevitable switch in consumption habits. YouTube was launched in February of 2005 and soon adopted a simple motto, broadcast yourself. While we initially watch on PCs and then smartphones, it seems that these days an increasing number of us are engaging with YouTube content on our televisions. That's one of the key findings of YouTube's annual year-end wrap-up, in which the Google-owned company revealed that in 2024, users streamed 1 billion hours of YouTube content daily through their televisions, putting YouTube in the heart of our living rooms as a communal consumption of entertainment. May be a surprise to many, but it's the culmination of a years-long shift in habits. At a time when media consumption is becoming more fragmented, YouTube is positioning itself as an epicenter, says Jess Maddox, associate professor at the University of Alabama and a social media expert. The process hasn't just happened in 2024, but has been building up over years. As YouTube shifted the maximum length of uploads, creators responded by expanding the scope of their videos. Some go down the feature-length documentary format, putting out deeply researched videos, while others like MrBeast borrow the episodic format more traditionally seen on TV. YouTube has been one of the more consistent and stable platforms for creators over the years. It doesn't surprise me that podcasters, video essayists, food reviewers, children's entertainers, and content creators from other genres are finding ways to upload their content to their primary platform, as well as YouTube, to grow their audiences and increase their revenues, says Brandon Harris, assistant professor at the University of Alabama and a member of the Content Creator Scholars Network. According to YouTube, the revenue generated is increasingly coming from those TV viewers too, citing that number of creators making a majority of their revenue from TV is up more than 30% year over year. And as YouTube called out in a blog post, another big driver of viewing on TV is podcasts. 400 million hours of which are consumed on living room devices monthly. If most podcasts are recorded on digital cameras and mics, why not turn the video on and upload it to Audible or Spotify and YouTube, Harris says. YouTube's increasing incursion into the living room highlights just how ubiquitous the platform has become. After all, it is the world's second biggest search engine behind Google. By being the one-stop shop for podcasting, content creators, influencers, and traditional broadcast television, YouTube is taking a spread-out media landscape and offering it all in one place, Maddox says. The popularity of YouTube on TV may also be down to the fact that it is bundling together disparate forms of content at a time when the industry more generally is going in the other direction, and consumers are struggling to afford the numerous streaming service subscriptions they're being asked to cough up for. This is advantageous as legacy media companies split and merge, as everyone launches their own streaming platform, and as social media platforms are in flux, says Maddox. It represents a new way forward in screen entertainment. We're likely to see more companies follow this model of media and entertainment convergence. It's an idea that Harris agrees with. YouTube has been the most popular video platform for decades, largely by bringing content from various industries onto one platform for an easier viewing experience. The concept of having the world's collective entertainment available just a remote press away is something that separates it from the competition. However, some caution is needed when thinking about the motivations behind increasing YouTube viewership from sofas around the world. The blog mentions that YouTube on TV is more popular than ever, which means that the company is paying more attention to people using YouTube apps on their smart TV devices, says Harris. That isn't necessarily the same thing as more people signing up for YouTube TV to gain access to premium programming like the NFL. But at a time when cord cutting is increasing, just 68.8 million people subscribe to a traditional pay TV service now, the lowest figures on record, according to Moffitt Nathanson. YouTube can capitalize on consumers seeking a cheaper alternative to traditional TV programming. Two of the fastest-growing areas of TV consumption in 2024 that YouTube predicts will continue into 2025 are sports and kids content. YouTube's own data suggests that watch time on highlights and analysis of sports is up 30% year over year. Amazon is a car dealership now. The online retail giant is dipping its toes into selling cars directly to consumers in partnership with Hyundai. The T-Rex of the online retail world announced that it is getting into the car selling business. Amazon announced that it will be partnering with Hyundai to sell vehicles directly to consumers online. As of today, car shoppers in 48 U.S. cities will be able to browse vehicles in stock at local participating retailers directly on Amazon as part of the Amazon Autos program. According to the company, potential car buyers will be able to search for cars based on make, model, trim, color, and features, and will be able shown transparent upfront pricing for their potential purchase. Buyers will also get an instant trade-in evaluation for their current car, generated by an independent third party, which can be applied directly to the cost of their new ride. Amazon will offer financing options or the ability to pay in full upfront, and buyers will schedule a pickup time at their local dealer. Amazon said it plans to expand its offerings to other regions next year, and while it's starting with Hyundai, the company said it would launch into other manufacturers in the future. Thus far, the service is only available for new vehicles. Amazon did not offer any word on whether it intends to expand into the used car market in the future, though it stands to reason that the company would eventually dip its toes into that space too. The partnership between Amazon and Hyundai dealers does have a bit of a no-brainer appeal for both parties. For Hyundai dealerships, it gives them the ability to both reach a wider audience of shoppers through the ubiquity of Amazon and not have the same pressure of maintaining its own online platform and inventory. Plus, let's be real, there's never been a good car dealership website. Increasingly, people want more of the car buying process to occur online. 69% of shoppers say they want to conduct more of the buying process from home, per research from Car Gurus, and yet most car dealership sites make the experience harder rather than easier. A study conducted on top car dealerships' websites found most fail basic website performance standards, and research from Shift Digital showed many of these sites are rife with language and calls to action that turn off shoppers. As for Amazon, this dealership arrangement allows it to get into some big-ticket sales without needing to create storage space for inventory or deal with the actual logistics of shipping. And car financing is big business. Americans currently owe a collective $1.626 trillion to auto lenders, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. Much of that is tied up in subprime loans, which auto dealers are notorious for pushing car buyers into, resulting in consumers paying significantly more than they need to. Most car loans made through a dealership are actually financed by a partnering bank or financial institution. But it's common for dealerships to tack an additional 1 to 2% onto the interest rate to cash in on a captive buyer. Per the Amazon Auto Help pages, financing will be handled by the dealership for now, with Amazon acting as the middleman for the transaction. So the company offers no guarantees for available annual percentage rates, that's APR, on the loans. While online car sales is a complicated business, so complicated that it has actually slowed Amazon's intended expansion into the space, Amazon might do well simply by minimizing the direct involvement of car dealerships. Nearly everyone finds dealing with car dealers unpleasant, and Amazon's platform is so familiar to shoppers at this point that it might ease some of the pain points of the process. On the flip side, it's going to be so annoying when you buy a roll of paper towels and Amazon hits you with, "People who bought this also bought a Hyundai Elantra." ChatGPT versus Perplexity, battle of the AI search engines. The days of Google's undisputed internet search dominance may be coming to an end. The rise of generative AI has ushered in a new means of finding information on the web, with ChatGPT and Perplexity AI leading the way. Unlike traditional Google searches, these platforms scour the internet for information regarding your query, then synthesize an answer using a conversational tone rather than returning a list of websites where the information can be found. This approach has proven popular with users, even though it raised some serious concerns with the content creators that these platforms scrape for their data. But which is best for you to actually use? Let's dig into how these two AI tools differ and which would be the most helpful for your prompts. Perplexity is available at two price points, free and pro. The free tier is available to everybody and offers unlimited quick searches, 3 pro searches per day, and access to the standard Perplexity AI model. The pro plan, which costs $20 a month, grants you the unlimited quick searches, 300 pro searches per day. Your choice of AI model, GPT 4.0, Claude 3, L Llama 3.1, and the ability to upload and analyze unlimited files, as well as visualize answers using Playground AI, DALL-E, and SDXL. OpenAI is structured much the same way. Anyone can sign up for a free account that grants access to GPT 4.0 Mini, as well as limited access to the larger GPT 4.0 model, data analysis, file uploads, vision, web browsing, and image generation. The $20 per month plus tier, conversely, offers everything that the free tier does, but in greater quantities. You get 5 times more messages with GPT-4.0, access to the 0.1 model family, full use of the platform's data analysis, file uploads, vision, web browsing, and image generation features, as well as the use of advanced voice mode and OpenAI's answer to Perplexity's ChatGPT search. The new $200 per month Pro plan simply provides unlimited priority access to all of those features and models. The advantages of using ChatGPT: even if you aren't a Plus subscriber with access to ChatGPT search proper, the chatbot platform still has access to the internet and can provide you with up-to-date information, just as ChatGPT's DALL-E integration eliminated the need for an external image generator. Search is designed to eliminate the need for an external search engine by blending the benefits of a natural language interface with the value of up-to-date sports scores, news, and stock quotes, according to the company. What's more, the amount you can do with the information retrieved in ChatGPT is far greater than with Perplexity. With ChatGPT, you can analyze, summarize, modify, and edit that content, as well as ask the AI follow-up questions. Well, the advantages for using Perplexity: while ChatGPT excels at creative tasks, Perplexity is purpose-built for the sole task of information retrieval. As such, its responses tend to be more accurate, with more transparent citations to more sources than ChatGPT, and it responds faster. The so-called answer engine excels at research tasks such as summarizing white papers and allows users to enact specific filters in their search criteria, like only pulling information from academic, video sharing, or social media sources. As with ChatGPT, Perplexity also allows its users to ask follow-up questions about a query, even enabling its AI to recall relevant snippets from earlier conversations. Which is more accurate? Well, while Perplexity AI is not entirely free of suffering hallucination and misattribution errors, it has proven itself to be a far more accurate source of information than ChatGPT search, despite the company's questionable data acquisition practices. In a recent study from Columbia's Toll Center for Digital Journalism, found that ChatGPT search struggles mightily in returning factually accurate information to its users. From each publisher of a pool of 20, the researchers selected 10 articles and extracted specific quotes the researchers wrote. These quotes were chosen because when entered into search engines like Google or Bing, they reliably returned the source article among the top 3 results. They then evaluated whether ChatGPT's new search tool accurately identified the original source for each quote. Of the 200 total selected articles, ChatGPT returned partially or entirely incorrect responses on 153 occasions, though it only acknowledged an inability to accurately respond to a query 7 times, the study found. Only in those 7 outputs did the chatbot use qualifying words and phrases like "appears," "it's possible," or "might," or statements like "I can't locate the exact article." In its defense, OpenAI accused the Columbia researchers of performing their study incorrectly and withholding data. As it is with all models, certain tasks are better suited for certain models, but it varies widely by the specifics of the prompt. Countries with the fastest mobile internet speeds. The world's fastest internet speeds are clustered in the Middle East and Asia, significantly outpacing average mobile download speeds in America. While 1.5 billion new people have started using the internet since 2018, there are clear divides in both mobile speeds and data traffic across regions. Overall, median mobile broadband speeds are 5 times faster in high-income countries compared to low-income countries. Adding to this, there is 20 times more median mobile broadband traffic per capita in high-income countries. Which countries have the fastest mobile internet speeds? They are, number one, UAE, with a median mobile download speed of 179.6. And this is followed by Qatar, South Korea, Norway, Denmark, Kuwait, China, Netherlands, Saudi Arabia, Bulgaria in the top 10. And Bulgaria at the top 10 is 97.6 mobile download speed. With the fastest mobile download speeds globally, the UAE takes the top spot. The country has emerged as an internet powerhouse since it began ramping up investment in digital infrastructure in 2012. This has led internet speeds to become roughly 100 times faster in the nation's capital over the last decade. In fact, thanks to the new rollouts from a domestic telecom operator, mobile internet speeds will soon be even 3 times faster for some users. Neighboring country Qatar has the second fastest median mobile download speeds worldwide. As the top countries in Asia, South Korea ranks first overall, according to the fiber optics cable penetration, a critical source of internet infrastructure. As the top country in Asia, South Korea ranks the first overall. In Europe, Norway and Denmark are home to the fastest mobile download speeds, a trend broadly seen over the last decade. By contrast, Ireland and Spain have some of the slowest speeds. Well, how does America stack up? It ranks 18th overall. Mobile download speed lag behind several high-income countries, largely due to telecom monopolies in the country. Not only is the internet sluggish compared to other rich nations, but also the costs are higher for Americans. In fact, the average cost of 1 gigabyte of mobile data in the United States is at least 7 times more expensive than in countries including Spain, China, France, and Brazil. Presenting the IT Pro Series with Benjamin Rockwell.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and so much more. How they intertwine and just bring us, sometimes, hopefully, to the next level. Now, the topic this week is something that has its origin in something. Basically, somebody reached out to me, and we were chatting in regards to the whole idea of resumes and automated tracking systems and things like that. And the origin of this is technical in nature, but then it gets into a lot more of the rest. So hang with me here. When we're talking about our resumes, we need to be very careful that we are striving to be at the top of the heap. And Jonathan reached out to me, and Jonathan's resume he's in the IT industry. He's been in the IT industry for a short time. He was looking to build up his resume. And I said, you know what, share it with me. And we went through a number of different things on that resume. And the resume was okay. But it could use a lot of additional tweaking, a little thing here, a little thing there. But when we started to really build this up, it was abundantly clear to me that there are a lot of people out there that are working on doing their resume on their own. And that seems at times like the best approach. It seems like, well, I know myself well. I know that I can do this and that, and I can tweak this here and I can do that here. I am quite good at doing resumes. I am not perfect. I'm not a paid resume writer or anything like that. And when I was talking with Jonathan, I realized, hey, I'm giving him some help, but the reality is we've moved in a direction where we need to be not at the 70% mark or 80% mark in that list. We need to be way up at the top. We need to be that person that is 1 in 200, 1 in 300. We need to be way up there because there are so many people that are bombarding human resources, recruiters, all of that. We're putting our resume up on LinkedIn, and so many of our resumes are poor. They are they're down there. And Jonathan's was good. It needed some help. And I suggested to him the idea that, look, I'm not a professional resume writer. I can bring out some of the different items. I can move myself up. But I have actually gone and I have received professional consultation on my resume. I'm going to name off two different groups. I've used one of them. Neither of these is an advertisement or anything like that, but I'm going to name off two. One of them is based off of my personal experience. The other one is based off of just a reputation and a lot of what I see from them, a lot of their postings. So one of them is Professor Nez, N-E-Z, and the other one is Storyline Resumes, S-T-O-R-E-Y. Line resumes, and look up both of those on Google if you are interested in anything like this, and they're going to give you guidance on the resume, just in a lot of their different postings that they do, whether it's on LinkedIn or wherever else. But I'll tell you, sitting down with someone is going to help you get to the top. Look. There are so many things that are happening in the world right now with resumes. We've got people who are utilizing the various forms of ChatGPT, AI, to glisten up their resume, to really make it shine a lot better. But there's also the automated tracking systems, which are starting to be adjusted so that they look for the AI written resumes. They're looking for different things to screen you out, and you have to get past all of the different layers along the way to make sure that you are that shining example of the person who needs to be in that position. And that requires someone who is not doing this once in a while, once every 3-4 years. Maybe it's once every 2 years or less. And maybe it's somebody who hasn't even, you may have not touched your resume in the last 7 years and things have changed. I'm going to tell you, it's not a cheap proposition. You're looking at spending anywhere from $1,000 to $2,000, depending on what kind of package you're getting. Whether you're getting a hands-on consultation, you're getting a full rewrite, or it's just little tweaks here and there. But just like we go in, everybody knows this, if you go to buy a car, you're going to be up against that car salesman who has been dealing with, on a daily basis, selling a matter of 15, 20 cars every month. And you're doing it, what, once every 3 years, 5 years? You don't have the expertise to get the best deal on that car because those people are professionals. Likewise, the resume professionals, yes, they have been doing this every day for years. It's well worth it. It is definitely something that I would suggest for anybody going into the tech industry or even anywhere else. And it's worth it. You get paid so much more because they are going to make sure that you shine enough to get a good, healthy pay bump in the process. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. Most senior executives do not have elite college degrees. The average cost of college in the United States is approximately $38,270 per student per year, which includes tuition, books, supplies, and living expenses. Elite colleges such as Ivy League institutions often have much higher sticker prices. Some of the most expensive colleges in the United States have tuition and fees exceeding $80,000 per year. The higher cost of a college degree from an elite college, however, does not correlate to the number of senior executives running Fortune 1000 companies. Becoming a senior executive does not require an elite college degree. Do you need a college degree from an elite university to become a business executive? A study of senior executives at Fortune 1000 companies finds that they are not exceptions. Studying the educational background of these 3,990 business leaders, researchers Stephen Brint and Sarah Yoshikawa find that over 70% do not have an undergraduate degree from an elite college. Defined as research universities and liberal arts colleges consistently ranked in the top 25 by U.S. News and World Report. Moreover, in some industries, it is rare for senior executives to have an elite undergraduate degree. According to the study, only 8% of senior executives in the motor vehicle industry who have a bachelor's degree graduated from an elite college or university, and only 9% in the food industry did. In construction, chemical, apparel, energy, healthcare, aerospace, and telecommunications, fewer than 20% of senior executives with a bachelor's degree received theirs from an elite university. Are elite graduate degrees critical to becoming an executive? No. While 92% of senior executives have a college degree, only 66% of senior executives at Fortune 1000 firms have graduate degrees. Of executives with graduate degrees in business, less than half, 44%, have elite degrees, having graduated from one of the top 10, 18 business schools. In motor vehicle, telecommunications, and aerospace, less than a third of executives with business degrees obtained them from elite business schools. The pattern is similar among senior executives with law degrees. Of those who graduated from law school, 37% attended an elite law school, one in the top 14. In the motor vehicle, food products, energy, aerospace, and apparel industries, a third or less of executives with a law degree received theirs from an elite university. So why all the hype around elite degrees? Perhaps while most senior executives did not graduate from an elite undergraduate program or an elite graduate school, doing so still raises the odds of becoming one. Graduating from an elite undergraduate institution comes with a fivefold advantage, and graduating from an elite business or law school boosts the odds even more. Some industries also hire more senior executives with elite degrees. Of senior executives with graduate business or law degrees, over half in finance, entertainment, and IT receive them from an elite university. These industries also hire the highest proportion of senior executives from elite undergraduate degrees, though the proportion never exceeds 32%. East Coast firms also hire more senior executives with elite degrees than firms located in other parts of the country. So what does all this mean? While elite degrees holders have an advantage, it's not as large as some may assume. There's certainly a path to the top without one. Presenting Technology Chatter with Benjamin Rockwell and Marty Winston.
Marty Winston joins me now. And Marty, what do you have for us this week?
Oh, some good stuff. Some of my
stocking
favorite
stuffers.
Oh, you can stuff a whole wardrobe.
It depends on the size of the stockings. Yeah, okay, all right.
Let me start with this, something that I got a kick out of. I like chargers with a lot of ports on them to kind of plug into the AC through something that isn't a wall wart, right?
Yes, yes.
And our pals at Anker sent their, it's got a serial number, an A2345 prime desktop charger. Now, we know what they do with GAN, gallium aluminum arsenide, or maybe I have that wrong, but GAN.
Nitride? I don't know, whatever. Whatever it is, GAN chargers.
It's nice.
Which is faster and all of that.
Yeah, yes. Handles a lot of power and doesn't heat up very much. Right.
Yeah.
Well, this charger is 250 watts of charging capacity in 6 ports. Four of them are
250 watts?
Four of them are okay. USB-C, two of them are USB-A, right?
Yeah, okay.
Now, the USB ports are good, just one or split it among four for up to 140 of those 250 watts.
Okay, so that's easily a couple of laptops at full bore. And right. if they're just charging, you could put in four of them charging at a slower rate. So that's nice.
And there's a switch on the front that gives you the control over where you prefer charging to go.
Okay, nice.
Now, what I like about this, it also has a sleep mode. You know, when it's charging things or not charging things and you're not fiddling with it, when it goes to sleep, you can configure the display to be a time and date clock.
Oh, nice. Okay. So it's starting to we're finally getting back into functionality that existed for a long time. And then it went to chargers and they don't have any of that. Not normally, at least. I like that. So, okay.
You know, it's a cute little clock that happens to have 7 cords coming out of it.
Okay.
You know, it's about $170. This is, again, the Anker Prime desktop charger. But if you shop around, if you look around, I've seen it as low as 110. So,
okay.
Happy shopping, everybody. One more thing from Anker. One of their Nebula video projectors have been really good. And the Nebula Cosmos 4K SE is brand new. It uses a hybrid of lasers and an LED because LEDs are more efficient than lasers at producing the red component of color images.
Mm-hmm.
So, and pricing is down for about $1,100. You get 1,800 ANSI lumens of brightness and a 400:1 contrast ratio in a projector that can show you images from 20 inches to 200 inch diagonal measure. That 200 inches is not remarkable. 20 inches is remarkable. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to get a projector that comes down to human sizes. And this one does. It also runs on the Google TV operating system. It can deliver Dolby audio and Dolby video. The audio is through a pair of 15-watt speakers. It couldn't be more portable if it had a handle on the top. And wait, it does.
It does. Yeah, I'm looking at the picture. I'm like, if it didn't have it, I'm like, I've seen a handle. And that's actually a cool thing. I love the idea of a handle on these because inevitably, you know, you're doing one of two things when you're dealing with projectors. You're doing it for a permanent installation or you're carrying it around. So yeah, great idea for that.
Yeah, by the way, I have experience working with one of its predecessors, which had a higher price tag. Specs are a little different. I wouldn't hesitate to choose this one. I think it's a beauty. Now, from another tech company, J5 Create.
Yeah.
A couple of devices that are good for people who believe in things like multimeters.
Okay.
One of them, and I'm holding it up for everybody on the radio to see, is a 4-foot USB cord with USB-C connectors. One of them is on a little pod with an OLED display that can tell you in a charging environment which way the charge is going, which direction, the voltage, the current, the wattage, and the milliamp hours that have gone by and the amount of time all on that little display.
Wow.
How many times have you wondered, first of all, if a charger was working or not, and second of all, why it was taking so long?
Well, daily? Daily?
This thing is PD compatible.
Okay.
Power delivery.
Yeah.
And that means.
So we're talking laptops. We're talking putting. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It also means that if you're seeing 9 volts, not 5 volts, you know it's in one of the advanced modes. This hits me in the heart. I can't tell you how many times I've wondered how much charge is there. Last item. For people who have...
Well, hold on. You didn't cover the price on that.
And I'm
seeing the price in your notes here.
It's about $20, everybody.
$20 for the analysis of the electricity that's going through. You know what? That actually excites me a lot, just because that is... I mean,
an everyday challenge.
It's a cord that solves those challenges. So
indeed it is that.
We'll get to that other item on a future.
No, all right. We've got plenty coming from J5. Happy holidays, everybody.
Marty had a little bit more for us to cover this week, so I've brought him back here.
Hello.
And yes, so you've got a number of different items here.
I've got some cool stuff from J5 Create. And J5 Create, you see them on the shelf all the time. They're in all of the online places. You want to know? They're usually a best choice.
Here's
one of the most unusual webcams you've ever seen. They say it's AI powered. Now, usually
it looks like it's pointing at the ceiling.
Oh, we'll get there.
Okay.
We'll get
there. All right. Go on. Sorry.
I just wanted to remark, for most webcams, AI means it's powered by another idiot. In this case, they've got something else going on.
Okay.
This, it has a head that swivels up or swivels at you. If you're solo, you point it at you and that it's done. But if it's pointed up, there are 6 display modes.
Okay.
You could have everybody around it on a single screen on 2 lines, the left side, the right side. So all of a sudden, one camera and you've got 6 different heads, each framed and each followed by this thing.
Okay, all right.
And you can do, in fact, it will automatically do zooming in and out. Or there are 1-person, 2-person, 3-person host modes, or you swivel down for the solo view.
Mm-hmm.
And there is one more that has a line of everybody in the room on a single line. So it looks a little bit like somebody held a strip of film up.
Okay.
It's that kind.
All right.
By the way, there's a reference to something called a telephone. I don't, your grandfather may have told you about it. Well, I suppose your mobile will work. This is a webcam with a speakerphone in, with all kinds of things like noise and echo cancellation and that kind of thing.
Okay.
And there's a remote control with it.
Mm-hmm.
So the AI with the camera does auto framing. It identifies all the faces there so the remote control can let a host pick among them.
Okay. All right.
And, audio.
You start becoming a director, a TV film director at that point. Almost.
Except those guys are paid.
Fair enough. It's a webcam. But, all right. Go on.
All right. So the J5 creates 360-degree AI-powered webcam with speakerphone, if I read the whole label on the box, is about $240 in stores and online. And if you've got a conference room or there's more than just you there, it is worth you taking a look.
Okay. What's the resolution on that?
1080p.
Okay.
So it's high def.
Yeah.
And if you want, you can buy 2 of them and go in 2 meetings at once and nobody will know.
All right.
Now, you remember what a challenge it used to be to make Windows systems and Mac systems talk to each other.
Oh yes. I'm sitting here. I'm trying to remember. There was a name for a program where if I wanted to take a Word document out of the Mac and put it onto PC, I had to format the floppy disk the proper way, and then
it would convert it.
And there was a lot of conversion stuff going on for whatever files I was using on one side or the other. Go on. Sorry.
Well. J5 solution is their wormhole switch, crosslink USB-C hub.
Wormhole. I'm feeling Star Trek-y all of a sudden. Okay, go on. So what does it do?
Well, it's a USB-C hub that makes it stupid easy to connect a Windows device to an iPad OS or iOS device to share files and more. You can share screens.
Okay.
Using this. It even has a USB port for PC peripherals, so you don't have to have huge dangling wires to get a keyboard or a mouse or something involved.
Okay.
So all you do is plug them in and the files transfer as easily as email attachments. That's the best way I can put it.
All right. I misspoke. I was thinking Mac OS. It's iOS.
It's iOS. Oh,
okay. All right.
And iPad OS. So for people who go both ways between the Windows world and the portable Apple world, now your work can go both ways too. Okay. It's about $70.
Okay. That's reasonable. Definitely.
Now, the star of the show for me.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, this term comes up a lot. Thunderbolt 4 mm-hmm. and USB 4
mm-hmm.
are essentially, never mind the branding stuff or the patents, are essentially the same interface.
Yes. Yeah.
Same. So, amazingly, J5 Create also came up with a docking station
mm-hmm.
that is compatible with both USB 4 and the ever-popular Thunderbolt 4.
Sure, yeah. Okay.
Isn't that amazing how they did that? Yeah.
So tell me about this docking station.
Well, this is one of the coolest docking stations mm-hmm. I've ever seen. You can add 3 4K displays.
Okay, there we go. That's nice.
You've got the bandwidth.
C4,
USB 4. It's a 12-in-1 docking station.
12, okay, so 3 monitors take up part of that, okay.
And, well, there's more, yeah, of course there is. It lets you connect those monitors at 4K and 60 frames per second.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you a gigabit Ethernet port.
Mm-hmm.
It has ultra high speed SD and micro SD 4.0 card reader.
Okay.
It's got a USB 2A connection. It's got a couple of USB 3A connections. It's got a mic and speaker jack and a USB-C connector that can handle data at 10 gig and can also handle a 4K 60 display.
So technically, you could have 4 screens hooked up at that point. Okay, that's sounding fun. I'm sitting here thinking, wait a second, 4 4K screens at 43 inches each. I've got 2 here in my office, but I don't use both of those at the same time. Those are 2 separate computers.
Well, you know what you could do is get a much bigger room and 4 projectors.
It's
lovely, it's slender, it's short, and a couple of little things. I'll tell you what else is neat about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a flip open compartment where you can tuck away its cable when it isn't plugged into your notebook, and when it is plugged into your notebook,
okay,
it's got some rubber bumper pads up top to help jack up the back of your notebook.
Nice. So it lift it up just a little bit. Get a good angle on it. All right.
Yeah. And it's about $180.
All right. Nice.
I think it's fabulous. J5 Create also does so many variations on USB connections and hubs.
Mm-hmm.
Portable stuff you take with, your little breakout stuff, mm-hmm. all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I've been looking at some of their future products.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There is, how do I put it? USB 4
mm-hmm.
with the ability to talk to HDMI
mm-hmm.
at 4K or more.
Mm-hmm.
2 monitors, 1 USB cable. To the notebook you already have for, I won't say chump change, but let's just say a fair price.
That sounds pretty exciting. I like the idea that they are thinking about the existing hardware and developing for that. Was so many companies want to develop for the latest and greatest, and that's an issue for me.
I strongly recommend find a free half hour and take a shovel to their website and take a look at how many things they're building. They're one of the under-recognized brands out there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I ran into them at trade shows. That's where that came from. Anyway,
very cool.
J5Create.com,
of course. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin, and thank you, Marty. Public service announcements. Computer club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. Log on to the club website for more information on remote meeting ID. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey meets Friday, January the 3rd. That's 2025. Meeting time is 8 p.m., online virtual meeting via Jitsi. Website is acgnj.org. Tech Ed Connect meets Tuesday, January the 7th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Hybrid meeting. Meeting at the Scarsdale Public Library, located at 54 Olmsted Road, Scarsdale, New York, and online virtual meeting via Zoom. Website is wpcug.org for more information. The New York Amateur Computer Club meets Thursday, January the 9th. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. Website is nyacc.org. The Long Island Macintosh Users Group meets Friday, January the 10th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. Website is limac.org. The Kingsbyte Computer Club meets Tuesday, January the 14th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Park Plaza Restaurant at 220 Cadman Plaza West in Brooklyn. For more information, 347-278-7320. The Brookdale Computer Users Group meets Thursday, January the 23rd. Meeting time is 6:45 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. And the website is bcug.com. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN, live streaming on the Internet. Podcast of the program is available on prn.live on the Internet. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to Hank at pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Michael Horowitz, Benjamin Rockwell, and Marty Winston, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station next week.